is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 538. I am Lisa Sheps, flying solo today, but I'm not really, because I have the cast of Ghost Quartet here to be my co-host. Say hello, cast.
Hello, and director. Cast.
Hello. Okay, you're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at KOOP.org. Do not go.
Step right up, the show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
Just need you to hear. It is Wednesday, October 16th on the show today, Penfold Theater Company and their show Ghost Quartet. Later on in the show, we'll have the Rosedale Shakespeare Company and their production of Love's Labor's Lost. And of course, we'll have lively conversations about the world of theater here in Austin, New York, Dallas, San Francisco, Los Angeles, London, and Glasgow. Don't go away. Okay, you're talking and the microphone was on. You got caught. That was one of our guest members, our guests here, which we will introduce in just a second. I'm Lisa Shelps. Well, Shelps, just changed my name to Shelps. Welcome to Offstage and On the Air. Nicole is out today. I think she's like hanging out with Hugh Grant or somebody named Hugh. Not Hugh Grant, Hugh. What's Hugh's last name?
Hefner.
Hugh Hefner. No.
Huey Lewis.
No.
Huey and Dewey and Louie.
That's it. All three of those. Anyway, so I want to thank Kim Simpson for a wonderful international folk bazaar. Let's introduce the folks that are here with us in the studio right now. We have Sarah Marie Curry. Welcome back to the show, Sarah Marie.
Thank you, Lisa Sheps. It is good to be here.
It is good to have you here. We have Nathan Daniel Ford.
Hi.
Have you been on the show before?
This is actually my third appearance.
And do I ask you that every single time?
At least twice, so
probably,
I guess I'm not very memorable.
I'm not the smartest person in the world. My elevator does not go all the way to the tool shed, so that's my problem.
Well, and we haven't had a chance to work together yet. So.
No, and we must. Yeah. And Megan, my I'm not looking at the script that has your phonetic spelling.
I'm ready for it.
Just... No. Tabak.
Yes, that's perfect.
Yay, I remembered. Thank you, Megan Tabak. We have the incomparable Liz Fisher. Hi.
Hi.
Wait, okay, guess what? That microphone isn't working. No, there it is.
There it goes.
And yeah, like I say, we can't test things out till we're on the air. We just show how the sausage is made here. Finally, we have Shane Satterfield.
Hi,
welcome. So are y'all ready to talk about what's been going on in New York? There's been lots of openings.
Yes, I'm aware of all of them, and I have all the information.
Oh, good. Thank God Sarah Marie Curry's here, because I don't.
Audience,
the first one we're going to talk about is the Helen Hayes Theater last Thursday, I think. Linda Vista by one Tracy Letts. We've heard of him, yes?
Yes.
Okay, so here it is. It's a brutally comedic look at Wheeler, a 50-year-old divorcee in the throes of a midlife spiral. Just out of his ex-wife's garage and into a place of his own, Wheeler starts on a path towards self-discovery, navigating blind dates, old friends, and new love. Full of opinions, yet short on self-examination, Wheeler must recognize the man he has become and the man he wants to be. And this is a Steppenwolf production along with... Uh-oh, it's Steppenwolf and another company that I just totally forgot. Anyway, Steppenwolf and another company. That's the one. At the Helen Hayes in New York City. And the reviews are pretty good, but it's not a critic's pick.
Oh.
Anybody care about that? He called it Tracy Letts' inspired, ruthless take on a classic midlife crisis. And the lead role is played by Ian Barford, who I do not know. Anybody know Ian Barford?
No.
Sarah Marie, you know Ian Barford.
Yeah.
You know, Mr. and Mrs. Barford's little kid.
Yep. That's where I came from.
Anyway, so Ian Barber says to have a performance that reminds you of how brilliantly bruising Steppenwolf acting can be. Mm. It's a beautiful little set. Looks a little bit like this. Here, I'll let everybody see it. Okay. And so it's directed by somebody named Dexter Bullard. I don't know any of these people. So it's an okay review. It's not a rave, but it looks like something fun. But I will read this that Ben Brantley says. Before Let's swam into the mainstream with Osage County, he was a master of pitch dark comedies that measured the grisliest depths of human behavior, like Killer Joe and Bug. And he's happy to report that that side of him is alive and squirming in Linda Vista. So one of the criticisms is the first half of this thing, it seemed more like a sitcom than anything else, and then it takes a darker turn.
I'll see. I want to see that.
Yeah, it actually looks pretty cool. It looks like something that's fun to see. It stars Ian Barford, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Barford's kid.
My poor parents, they're listening to this and just crying.
Why?
Because they probably want to shout out, Mary and Jim Tufts, hi.
Hey, Mary and Jim Tufts. It's good. Maybe they've seen the show.
I'm sure that they haven't. No.
Anyway, some of the other critics said, Tim Tiemann of the Daily Beast said this is called it Tracy Letts witty but uneven comedy drama. David Rooney of the Hollywood Reporter said, but the writing is so zingy and the playwright's voice so sharp in many of Wheeler's pronouncements that it remains entertaining and Bullard keeps it humming along on Todd Rosenthal's revolving set. Hmm. I want a revolving set.
I would love a revolve. You could do a lot of fun stuff on a revolve.
Can I get one of those in my theater? The very first Broadway show I saw in 1969 was Fiddler on the Roof. And it had the turntable. And I went home. I was 11 years old. I went home and told everybody they built theaters for the show. I was convinced that the whole theater was built for Fiddler on the Roof.
I remember going to the Majestic Theater to see Les Mis when it toured, and that was like our big trip in school, and being like, they put everything on a Lazy Susan!
Lazy Susan.
That's how I explained it.
Well, you know, the Lazy Susan is no longer part of Les Mis.
Oh.
It's gone.
Oh, yeah, I heard.
It's now projection.
What?
And the last, well, it's been gone for quite a while, but the last holdout was the London company, but they just got rid of it in the London company about 3 or 4 months ago. Liz Fisher's shaking her head.
Boo.
You know what? Tactical effects.
Yeah. I have to admit here on the air, and I'm sure I've admitted it before, I never saw Les Mis on the revolving stage.
Lisa Sheps.
It was playing all my entire life in New York. I never went to see it.
Lisa Sheps.
Yeah, I was anti. It was part of that. It started with Phantom, and then it was Miss Saigon, and then Les Mis. These big fancy
mega musicals. Yeah.
Musicals, and I was rebelling against it, and I refused to go see, and never saw. At the time, contemporaneously, I didn't see any three of those.
Like that was your wild child streak.
It was.
You're like, nope.
My
I'm
wild
not,
adult
streak. I'm
saying
no streak. To drugs and no to Les Mis.
Well, as a matter of fact, with Phantom, I didn't see Phantom until, I don't know, maybe 10 or 15 years ago. And, you know, you always heard about the chandelier. When the chandelier happened, I went, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same with the helicopter in Miss Saigon, right?
I haven't seen Miss Saigon yet. But the new chandelier, though, there's a new chandelier for Phantom.
Is it all projection?
No, yes, it is. It's a holograph. But it's actually a pretty spectacular chandelier. All right, let's talk about The Wrong Man. We've been talking about The Wrong Man for a while because we're wrong. Now, this was The Wrong Man made the news not too long ago when the star of The Wrong Man, and I've just totally lost his name because that's how stupid I am, took the cell phone away. Have y'all been hearing this thing? During the middle of the song, came and grabbed the cell phone, and Joshua Henry, and in the middle of the song, took it and threw it underneath. And it's been bringing lots of different discussions about cell phone usage in the theater.
This is right after the slave play incident.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, yeah. What?
Rihanna got called out for using her cell phone and texting with the playwright during the play.
But he was happy about it.
Yeah, well, not texting, he was tweeting. But yes, yeah, he was happy
pleased about
it. So we've got both sides of the aisle going right now.
And we talked about it here, and we can't get into it here too much because we've talked about it a lot, but I'm sort of going on to a rethinking of the use of cell phones in theater. You know, I am old school that I don't want it, but it's a new generation and new people, and it might, and with the right show, it might be good. And we've experimented with the idea of putting our programs just on so that people can see the programs on the phone, but we were actually talking about getting the technology to actually hand people like a paper thing so that it's not very bright. What do you think of the whole cell phone device usage within a show?
I feel like it's kind of cultural right now to say unilateral opinion about all things. And mm-hmm. I think it should always be treated as a case by case basis. You know what I mean? Depending on the art. That said, it as an improviser, a lot of times audience members come in and think that they can be the photographer for the improv show, and that drives me.
It's a whole different thing.
It's a whole different animal, right? Yeah. But it's another gray area of like.
Right, and it's right there.
Yeah.
Well, and I even see it a lot, like with like live music performance and such. Like that, to me, it's just like another way that people are not being present with what's going on in front of them because they're like, "Ooh, I have to save this so I can show it to other people later that I saw this," and it's like. But you didn't really see it. You saw your phone screen. Like,
well, that is actually one of the things that I wanted to discuss. Humans are not made. This idea of multitasking is a fallacy. We're not wired to do that. So I remember once that I was going to try to live tweet along with a TV show I was seeing because I didn't pay attention to the TV show. I was just looking at my tweeter. But I will say unequivocally, I totally disagree with actors breaking character and breaking the fourth wall to deal with phones. Sorry, Patti LuPone, not crazy about it.
I agree as well. I mean, I feel like it's they're trying to make a stand and like get that press to have people talking about it, but it takes people more out of the moment for you to step out of character and do that than it does to just ignore the person.
Well, it's
in
not
the
fair to the production.
Yeah.
Liz Fisher, how do you feel as a director if you're one of your actors stepped out of character to deal with something?
Oh, stepping out of character? I mean, like, unless it's a safety issue. Like, that's something entirely
different story.
Different story.
Yes.
But for the cell phone.
Rarely is it a safety issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm the wrong person to ask on the cell phone debate because, like, I wrote and directed a show that was all about, like, having audiences use their cell phones in a play. So,
which is awesome. Know. And there was that other, there's the one that was on, I think it was off Broadway, like, a couple of years ago. It was all about sound, and you actually listen to it through headphones.
Yeah, and I think I mean, we have to start having the conversation that isn't so absolutist, like Sarah Murray was sort of saying, because they're not going away, and it's not going to get better.
And
so
we may as well use them in our art.
Exactly.
Right? Yep. Anyway, we're getting off topic, but that's fine. The review for The Wrong Man is not so good, but it's about a person that got wrongly accused and is on death row. There's murders involved. It's a musical, but
sorry, continue.
I know. They say mostly the lyrics are a one size fits all nature. They're very talking about the very trite and overused lyrics, etc., etc. Not good reviews. It says the show keeps reiterating its central premise without grounding in a dark conceit with the details that would give it goose flesh and blood existence. So
goose flesh is gross. I said it.
Not if you're a goose.
It's gross. Sorry, goose. Sorry, geeses.
Not if you're a goose.
Sorry, geeses.
And the final thing that opened is the Rose Tattoo with one Marissa Tomei. That's my phone. We'll just let it go. With Marissa Tomei, it opened on the 15th of October, which, when was that? Yesterday? What's today?
Yes, yesterday.
At the American Airlines Theater. It is a Tennessee Williams show that was first in 1952, I think. Again, this one wasn't a great. Let's read the synopsis. So it's the character Serafina, who is a widow, who rekindles her desire for love, lust, and life in the arms of a fiery suitor. And this is a Tennessee Williams. This is like a rom-com. It's like a light. It's a light-hearted Tennessee Williams.
What?
Which to me sounds like a contradiction.
Do you know which chronologically where he wrote this? Do you know?
I believe he wrote it in his bedroom. I do not know when chronologically he did it. I knew exactly what you were asking.
I've seen the production photos, or at least a couple of Marissa Tomei just looking stunning, but not like she's having
She looks a
good
little
time.
Like this.
Yeah. Oh, hey.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, I love me a Marissa
that
Tomei.
Looks like Tennessee Williams.
So let's see why I highlighted this piece. I'm going to read it. I don't know why I highlighted it. This was a review written by Ben Brantley. He said, to understand what's sweeping through this production, which opened at the American Airlines Theater on Tuesday. We decided that that was yesterday. With a cast led by a valiant Marissa Tomei, listens to the words of Assunta, the wise old Sicilian signora. There's something wild in the air, says Assunta, who's played by Carolyn Meghini, in the play's opening moments. To Serafini, the ecstatically married wife of a virile truck driver, no wind, but everything is moving. She adds that she can hear the noises of the stars. So I believe he's saying that... no wind, but everything is moving, is what he's saying about this piece. Didn't like it a lot. It was first produced in 1951. Interestingly enough, guess how many Tony Awards Tennessee Williams has for his plays and whether this is one of them.
Two.
Any other guesses?
Zero.
One. And it's this one.
Liz and I win.
Okay. Yeah, which I find interesting. So the plot is built around the unlikely destruction and resurrection of Serafina the seamstress, a proper corset-wearing wife and mother whose life is unhinged when the husband whom she worships, body and soul, but particularly body, dies in a truck clash. Trash. Wow. If I had a nickel. Anyway.
Yeah.
Again, this was opened at the Williamstown Theater Festival. Not so sure this is one I want to see. Let's see what the other... critics said. New York One's Roma Torre said Marissa Tomei paired with Broadway newcomer Emmon Elliott are a wonderful delight together.
Do they have pictures of the virile husband?
No,
dang.
Just Marissa Tomei. Adam Feldman said the rose tattoo gets more pleasurable as it opens into bloom. You half expect someone to step forward and say, "Mamma mia, that's a spicy drama."
Oh dear.
Oh,
oh no. Okay. Anybody Fleabag fan here?
Yeah, but I'm only in the middle of season one, so no spoilers.
No, there's no spoilers. I'm not even. I just decided to watch it. I watched it on the airplane this last week. And I think I saw all of season one, I think, is only six episodes.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Megan?
I believe I saw all of season one on the airplane.
I watched her on Saturday Night Live, though, and she was fantastic.
So you know it's based on a show.
Yeah, she's a playwright.
Right. So this was a show done in the Fringe Festival, and Fathom Events, which broadcasts shows around the country at theaters, is broadcasting this show, Fleabag, on November 18th, 7 p.m. I meant to look at see which theaters is doing it here because I plan to go see it.
Lisa,
let's go.
Yes.
Let's all. Okay.
Is it her original Fringe performance?
Yeah.
Let's all go, everyone.
It was at the Wyndham Theatres, London, during its sellout performance at the Annapurna Theatre. Yeah, so let's go.
Date.
Let's all agree that if we're not married on November 17th, that we'll meet on the 18th and go see this show.
Yes. Wait, but I'm already married.
Yeah. Well, nobody's perfect. let's see. What else do we want to talk about? Sarah Holdren, who wrote for Vulture, which I did not realize is the New York Magazine arts page.
Yeah,
I didn't realize it's New York Magazine.
I'm addicted to Vulture. It's great.
Yeah. So Sarah Holdren, who's a really wonderful critic, is no longer criticizing. She's going to make a career as a director, go to concentrate on her directing work. And the new critic name for Vulture is Helen Shaw, who looks like that. That's all I know about her. Here. That's for everybody else to see. Had y'all heard about the Michael Jackson musical?
No.
Don't Stop Till You Get Enough?
No.
Maybe they were working on it.
Well, they were set to do it. It's actually produced by the Jackson family. Mm. They were set to do it. They were going to open in Chicago when the documentary came out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, well, we'll wait, which we all, most people thought, okay, it's dead, but it's back.
Yeah.
It's, I know.
I'm just going to make noise effects for the rest of the show.
The New York Post article that's written by Johnny Okasinski starts out the article by saying, if they were smart, they'd beat it. So they've changed the name from Can't Stop Till You Get Enough, which is an unfortunate title for that, mm-hmm. to MJ the musical, and it's gonna open in New York, and it's gonna, that's just not a smart thing to do.
No.
So that's an interesting article. All these are going to be linked on our site, offstageonair.com, and you can see it. But this whole article goes on to talk about, you know, could they, because the show takes place during the recording of Thriller. So it's all about the music, but there's so much problematic stuff around them. And do they decide to deal with the issues around his life, or do they ignore it? And no matter what they do, it's going to not bode well for them. That's that. There's a musical called Bliss. It's a musical fantasy, and it's going to star one Mario Cantone.
What's it about?
I'm going to tell you. It's a fantasy adventure that flips the traditional princess narrative upside down. Hidden away for years by an overprotective father, four wildly distinctive and lovably awkward princesses dream of a world beyond the castle walls. When they at last escape, they encounter adventures beyond their wildest imaginations and a world that judges them based on appearance. In the end, they must each decide what is worth sacrificing for a happily ever after. And that is opening at the Fifth Avenue Theater in Seattle right before Mrs. Doubtfire opens at the Seattle. And Mrs. Doubtfire has a Broadway announcement opening as well. So this, other than Mario Cantone, it's got Cheryl Coller, who was a Tony nominee for Mothers and Sons. Directed by Cheryl Coller and choreographed by Josh Prince. Isn't it great that the choreographer's name is Prince and it's about princesses?
I wonder if he's related to Harold Prince.
It could be. Or Prince.
That's possible, too.
You never know. And then finally, we just talked about Mrs. Doubtfire starring Rob McClure. It is, again, going into that same Seattle theater, but it's going to open on March 9th in New York City at the Stephen Sondheim Theater. Book is by Carrie Kirkpatrick and John O'Farrell, and the music and lyrics are by Wayne Kilpatrick and Carrie Kirkpatrick.
What else have they done? That name sounds familiar. Do you know?
Something Rotten.
Oh, okay.
Which I loved. Did anybody see that when it was here or in New York?
No.
Oh, so much fun. What'd you think of it, Liz?
It's just fun.
Fun, right?
Like unabashed fun.
Yeah, and it's so rare to, a lot of times you go to those things and it's not as fun as it, but it was fun. And to refresh people's memory, it opened the same season as Hamilton, and they didn't win because of Hamilton.
Right.
And they took out big full page ads in the Times saying how great it was to not win. It was pretty funny. But yeah, Something Rotten. Pretty funny, especially if you're a Shakespeare fan. And the last thing we'll talk about, and I won't talk about it a lot. We talked a little bit about this last week. Why did I just lose his name? It was just in my theater. Plano. He wrote Plano.
Will Ivory.
Yeah. Lawbury wrote a play called Heroes of the Fourth Turning. It's in New York right now. And we talked about it last week. It is a conservative-leaning play. And it's not... It shows the conservatives in a very good light. And there's an article this week about Will Aubrey and how he grew up and what the play means and some of the things that I didn't realize. Guess how old Will Aubrey is? 30. Oh,
he's young.
30.
He came into town for the run, or at least the last weekend for Plano.
I didn't see him there.
Yeah, he was there on closing night.
Oh, I was there too. So just this paragraph says, it's a world Aubrey, who recently turned 30, knows well. His father, a literary scholar, is currently the president of Wyoming Catholic College, a tiny conservative institution whose mixture of Outward Bound style wilderness training and great books curriculum inspired the play's fictional Transfiguration College. His mother, a political philosopher, also teaches there. That's not the family makeup of someone you would think of as conservative. But it is. And it makes me think, as someone who is on the other side of the aisle, to really understand that there are two sides to things. And there are people, thinking rational people that have differing views. And that's basically what this says. This is a way to show differing views without being evil about it. And it runs, and let's see how we feel about this. 2 hours, no intermission.
No.
Thank you. Yeah. Liz is making a face, opinion, which doesn't work on radio. What's your thought?
I've never seen Sarah Marie have such strong feelings about shows without intermission.
I need a break. I need an intermission. If it's over 90 minutes.
90 minutes. Although we did, the show that you and I did together was 95 minutes without an intermission.
Was it?
Yeah, it was over 90 minutes.
Well, I can make just a small argument here, is people don't ask for that at films.
That's true.
Yeah.
And most films, but it's not rude
to get up and walk out in a film.
Well, and I get snacks at films.
That's the expectation then, is like, if you have to leave, you have to leave.
But if anything, the fact that you get drinks at films means that you might be more likely to need to leave the theater.
But, and here's the other thing about films, is it's a cold medium, right? Like, the attention focus and like visceral feeling that I have watching theater, if you make me do it for 2 hours, I feel like I'm going to explode because I feel so many feelings. Yeah. And I need like a decompress break.
I think 2 hours, for me, it's more of a practical matter. Hour and a half, I can sit through an hour and a half with no problem. I believe it is unfair to the performers, especially in a smaller theater, to get up and walk out to go to the bathroom and then to come back in. So I need the break to take care of things that I need to take care of. With that, we're going to take a little break, and we're going to hear a little bit of the music from The Rose Tattoo. And I believe this is from the film, but I'm not sure. Here it is. We'll be right back. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and a cast of characters here with us. We've had some great conversations, and now we're going to turn and talk about Penfold Theater Company's Ghost Quartet by Dave Malloy. And here with it is the entire cast and the director. And we have the directors, Liz Fisher. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi. We have Sarah Marie Curry.
Hello.
Nathan Daniel Ford.
Hi.
Megan Tabak.
Hello.
And Shane Satterfield.
Hi.
Shane, you know what? Since you admitted to us that you're like slightly nervous of being on the air, so therefore I'm going to give you a job to do right now and give me a number between 2 and 52.
14.
14. Let's see what that is. Well, it appears to be nothing.
Good job, Shane.
No, it's something. My computer does not want to acknowledge the, and I don't, it doesn't want to acknowledge the keyboard. So I'm sure it was a delightful thing. We might get that working later and we'll see what it was. So we do legal IDs and we have a bunch of them and we make people choose. So you guys are doing Ghost Quartet by Dave Malloy. Has he done anything else that people would know?
No.
Okay, good. Wait, hold on. I'm going to turn your microphones on. Okay, now try that again.
So Dave Malloy's got a fascination with obscure literature, so I'm sure you haven't heard anything that he's done, because he likes dusty old books. And who reads those anymore, right?
Nobody. What's a book? So tell us about this show, Ghost Quartet.
Yeah, so this is, Dave Malloy calls this a live performance of a concept album. So he started working on this with a couple of friends, just writing a bunch of songs, and it doesn't really have your traditional musical structure in the sense of there's not really a plot, there's not really characters. We get the sense of all of that as you sort of listen to the tracks on the album, in the same way that, like, if you listen to Ziggy Stardust or The Wall over and over again, you start to kind of get a sense of it. Tommy, totally Tommy. So it's that sort of feel. And he wrote this with three other friends who are all insanely talented musicians. So the musical actually calls for 27 different instruments.
Ah.
And in the original production, they did it as a concert staging, sort of sitting around in a semicircle with all of those instruments surrounding them and played the whole thing through. So it's basically a sing through. Yeah.
So is this, I'm assuming we're not doing it that way. This is more of a staged piece.
Totally a staged piece. Because it's me. Well, when Nathan and Ryan brought this piece to my attention, I didn't know it. I knew Natasha and Pierre because, of course, you have to. And started listening to the album over and over again. I thought, like, there's a really interesting story that I see coming through that I'm excited to explore. So then we sort of went down this fun path of creating the production as it stands today.
Well, that's awesome. So are there characters? Do each of you play a character?
We each play so many characters.
Okay. Well, now I'm confused to ask you my next question. I was going to go through and see what everybody's doing, but you're doing basically, it's a song cycle in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's like a song cycle. So each one of our cast members plays the person who originated that role, so the roles of Dave and Brent and Gelsey and Britton.
Mm-hmm.
And then each one of those sort of storytellers tell different stories. There's kind of four primary stories that run through the night, and each one of them plays different characters inside of those stories on top of also playing the sort of storyteller character.
And you guys are doing this at the Blue Genie Art Bazaar.
Yeah.
That's kind of bizarre.
Yeah.
It is.
but that's it's a big open space. So you had to bring in, you had to create your theater.
We built a theater inside of a theater.
Do you have a turntable?
I wish. That's the one thing that we didn't get. But we shrink the space down because we built a little dive bar inside of Blue Genie that is our set.
Oh,
so
cool.
When you walk into the space, there's a little bit of a journey that you have to go through to get to the dive bar. But then once you get there, it's pretty cool.
Sounds exciting. So not only are you doing it there, then you're taking it kind of on the road afterwards and doing it at the Driscoll.
Yeah.
For Halloween? Is that Halloween?
For Halloween. And then the day after Dia de los Muertos, we'll be doing two performances at the Driscoll. So our ghosts will get to hang out with the Driscoll ghosts.
So these are so ghost quartet. That makes me think that these are indeed ghosts. Are they?
I think you'd have to come and see and tell me what you think.
Okay.
So
we don't
but
know.
There's the stories that they tell have a lot of ghost stories. The not all of the stories, but they're sort of based on these ideas of ghosts and afterlives and the sort of like different cycles that people can kind of live through in those relationships. So it feels a little ghostly.
Is it completely sung through? Do y'all sing through it?
Mostly, yes.
We have like two or three dialogue scenes in the entire piece. Everything else is all sung through.
Well, that's fun. That seems like a lot of work, too.
Oh, and that's not even half of it. These folks also play, oh goodness, between the four of them, a dozen instruments on along with our three-person
band. Does anybody play the dobro?
Not in this production. Yeah. I have before.
I actually don't really even know what a dobro is, but it just sounded fun to say.
Sounds like a dog breed.
It does. I have a dobro mix.
Well, and then we also have to dance, which there was no dance call for auditions, but I'm told that we do it really, really well. That's what I'm told.
Awesome. Well, I know you came prepared to do one or two numbers. Why don't we give folks a taste of what you're going to do?
Sure. So the first song that we have is actually my personal favorite one of the entire piece. It's a song called Prayer. And I don't think it needs a whole lot of setup. So I'm going to hand it over to these fine folks to take it away.
Okay, great. This is Sarah Marie Curry, Megan Tabak, Nathan Daniel Ford, and Shane Satterfield doing a number from Penfield Theater Company's production of Ghost Quartet.
I will try to forgive myself for living in the dark, for my loss of wonder, for forgetting how to play. I will try to forgive myself for being absent in public and bored be four stars. For not remembering, for not being in my body, for not starting right now, I will try to see myself as I am.
Oh my God. That's right? Just so beautiful.
Isn't that stunning?
And yes.
It is, as you heard, it's a cappella. So there's a couple of moments in the piece where
all those
instruments go away and you just get voices. And it's so incredible.
Well, and you so rarely hear four-part harmony anymore. Right? It's so nice. It's so nice to get that.
Yeah, it's one of the things that's kind of fun. You know, if you're a fan of Dave Malloy's work, you get to see, like, in this piece, how he's starting to, like, write towards something like octet with all of that, like, amazing harmonies. But then also there's pieces in it that sort of feel a little bit like they might have come from Natasha and Pierre. So it's a really exciting sort of blend, and who knows what other idea that lives in this play right now that might show up in his next piece, Moby Dick. Yeah. Right? That's what he's working on now.
Is he really? Mm-hmm. What do you rhyme with Queequeg? Tree frog. I did it.
He has some pretty impressive rhymes even in this one.
It sounds wonderful. I'm guessing the piece that you just did here isn't a big choreographic piece.
No. We have to stare at each other.
Well, and watching it, it's too bad we don't have our video camera going this time, because you guys did exactly that. It was fun to watch you guys sing that.
Thanks.
What fun. And y'all have another one, yes?
Yeah.
Let's do another one.
Yeah.
Great.
Because we have time. Why not?
Yeah.
What's the next one we're going to do?
I think we're going to do Four Friends.
So this is another pleaser. So in addition to this being a musical about, you know, stories and friends, it's also about whiskey. So this song is called Four Friends.
Four Friends Drinking Whiskey.
Four Friends Drinking Whiskey.
Just take it over.
All right.
Son, you dignified, righteous young man.
I don't care much for God, no matter what set of rules you got. Protestant this and Catholic that, to me it's just diddly squat. But I love a good rebellion, and I love to hear that fiddle slide. So when the rebels croon about that rising moon, I'm standing right here by Jamie's side.
I like to lose my mind, get blurry, sloppy, boozy, and blind. Like to put my hand on a pretty girl's knee. And I got four dear friends to help me. Oh, Maker's Mark, you sweet little temptress, you.
I remember you and my daddy sitting in the easy chair. He'd rip open your wax, pour a finger or two, and then he'd sit in the dark and just stare. Now I know that he was thinking about something, maybe something sad from long ago. But when he tucked me in with that sad little grin, I thought, maybe I don't want to know.
I like to lose my mind, get blurry, sloppy, boozy, and blind. Like to put my hand on a pretty girl's knee.
Pretty boy's knee.
And I beg of four dear friends to help me. Four dear friends to help me. Four dear friends to help me.
Awesome. Now, you guys opened last week.
Opened last week,
That's such a beautiful song, I should say. And what gorgeous the solo, but the two of you, and I'm pointing to Megan and Shane, gorgeous voice.
Right?
Y'all are okay, too.
Yeah.
But gorgeous voices. Our solos are beautiful. You could, like, cut them with butter.
Folks will have to come back to catch our other two cast members for their solos on that song.
They will.
There's four friends, after all.
So you are indeed open now. When do you play till?
We close at Blue Genie on Sunday the 27th, and then we've got a couple of days off before we move over to the Driscoll for two nights only.
And where can folks go to get more information about all of that
stuff? They can go to Penfold Theater's website for details and all the information you could possibly handle.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
That was Liz Fisher, Sarah Marie Curry, Megan Tabak, Nathan Daniel Ford, and Shane Satterfield of Penfold Theater Company's production of Ghost Quartet by Dave Malloy, playing October 11th through 27th at the Blue Genie Art Bazaar. For more information, penfoldtheater.org. We'll be right back. This is also from Ghost Quartet. Now we are back. You're listening to Offstage on the Air with Lisa Sheps, flying solo today. We have just a whole nother group of people that just walked in the door. I wasn't given their names in advance other than Deb Strusan. So why don't we go through and just introduce ourselves down the row?
Hi, my name is Lemons Clemens. I'm a part of Rosedale Shakespeare on the board.
Let me ask you all to get right up onto that microphone and pull that microphone down right at your mouth and give us that again, because we couldn't really hear you.
No worries. My name's Lemons Clemens. I'm a part of the board of Rosedale Shakespeare, and I'm also in our production of Love's Labor's Lost as Boyette and Moat.
Awesome. Lemon Clemens?
Lemons.
Lemon, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Shall I go?
Please.
I am Deb Strusand. I am artistic director of Rosedale Shakespeare, and I am the director of Love's Labor's Lost.
I'm Levi Dorr. I am playing Launderville and Costard in the show.
I am Anna Carvalho, and I am Dumaine and Jaquanita in the show.
Hello, Mindy Rast Keenan, and I am Don Armato and Maria in the show.
Awesome. Well, we're actually not at your section right now. We're at the local section, but we're going to get really, really close to talking to you guys. I'm just going to just jump right into the Today in Theater History, because we've got a lot of stuff going on. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get a little history lesson while you're here.
Awesome.
So back in 1854, Levi, you remember this.
Oh, yeah.
Oscar Wilde is born. Lots of birthdays today. So another birthday is somebody named Eugene O'Neill. Mm-hmm. Heard of him.
Sounds vaguely familiar.
And also Ford Lee Buck Washington. Anybody?
I know the name Ford.
Yeah, I know the name Ford. I know the name Washington.
And I know the name Lee. So he's half of a dancing team called Buck and Bubbles. They were on they were in vaudeville, and then they went to Broadway. They were in Ziegfeld Follies. They were in Porgy and Beth. So he originated the role of Mingo in Porgy and Beth under the name Ford L. Buck. Huh. So that's interesting. Also, birthday of one Angela Lansbury.
Oh, I love her.
And me too. And then this is the anniversary of Judy Garland opening her legendary concert at the Palace.
Oh, wow. Yes.
And she's in the news these days. Anybody see the movie yet?
Not yet. I didn't know it came out yet.
No? Oh, it's out. It's out. In 1967, the very first postage stamp featuring an American playwright is issued. Anybody want to hazard a guess as to who it was?
Arthur Miller?
No, I'll tell you, it's his birthday today.
Eugene O'Neill.
Eugene O'Neill, yay!
Nice one, Levi.
And this is the death anniversary of Shirley Booth. She made her Broadway debut at 18 years old as the ingenue in Hell's Bells. She's probably most known for playing Hazel on television. Mm. Anybody even remember that?
I know of it, but as to what it means is a blur.
No, Hazel is great. It was a sitcom back in the... early 70s, maybe late 60s. She, in Hell's Bells, her leading man was a very young man named Humphrey Bogart. That's sort of interesting. 1997, Sideshow opened, and they just had a wonderful revival recently. They also played here last season about, oh my God, I forgot their names, the Hilton twins, Siamese conjoined twins.
The one where the name comes from, Siamese twins, the two brothers?
No. Oh, this is the Hilton. I believe they're the Hilton or.
Oh yeah, they're two little girls.
Anyway,
yes.
They were. That was done by Alice Ripley and Emily Skinner, back in 1997. This is also the first preview for the gothic horror musical Dance of the Vampires. Yeah, it got slayed at the reviews. It cost $12 million, and in 2002, it was one of the costliest Broadway flops ever. And then in 2005, Broadway's Virginia Theater is renamed the Austin Wilson Theater for the playwright who died 2 weeks earlier. I find it interesting because this is the Broadway theater that I performed in, and it was when I was there, it was called the Anta Theater. That's the end of that story. So that's today in theater history.
Thank you.
So you know what? We're going to just jump right into Love's Labor's Lost at this point and hear about your show. So Deb, this is you're the artistic director of Rosedale Shakespeare, which Correct. Used to be called Something for Nothing.
Correct.
Nothing for Something.
We hope to give. We always plan to give something for nothing rather than the other way around.
Yeah. So tell us about this production.
So what makes Love's Labor's Lost special, I think, is how playful and charming it is. It is the story of several men who swear to study together and not see any women for 3 years, which seems like a good idea at the time, but obviously is not. As soon as some women show up, it all goes out the window, and everything that follows from that is a series of hijinks about how they are going to woo the women and what fools they make of themselves. So,
well, that's wonderful. And so, what does everybody play? So, what do you play, Lemon?
Lemons.
Yeah, see, if I don't get them ahead of time, it's just you're going by my hearing, which isn't very good.
No worries. I'll respond.
So I apologize. I screw up everybody's names.
Any citrus, she's good.
Yeah, citrus.
Tell us about your role.
I play Boyette, who is a lord of France, and he serves the princess, who is one of the many ladies who shows up and ruins the king's plans. I also play Moat, who is a servant to Don Armado, who is pretty reluctant to do so.
And that's who Lemons is going to be playing in the scene for today.
Correct.
Oh, awesome. And Deb, you are the director.
But I'm also going to be reading in for an absent actor. I'm going to be reading Constable Dahl, who's one of Shakespeare's many foolish constables.
Okay. And Levi?
I am playing Launderville, who is one of the lords who swears off women with the king, and as well as Costard, who is a fun guy who kind of messes things up.
So I need to just say that I think Lemons should be playing Costard. So if it's not too long, too late to change that, because you could be Lemons Costard.
Tomorrow. It's fine.
I could be Lemons Costard.
Anybody with me? Lemon Custard? Okay. Sorry. And is it Erica?
Anna.
Annika.
Yeah. Anna.
Anna. Okay. I was writing quickly.
That's okay. My last name, it's pretty complicated, so don't worry.
Do it. Say it.
Carvalho.
Carvalho.
Okay. Well, the translation is oak, so I'm a tree. In English, Carvalho is oak.
Okay, and what do you play?
So I'm Dumaine. I'm one of the lords, and I'm the youngest. And I'm the guy that, you know, can go at night and try to have all the girls and the cute one and be, you know, the smartest. But he's not. He's freedom. And when that put nothing.
He's kidding himself.
Yes. And I'm Jacquinita as well. I'm a country maid, country witch. Witch. Sorry, my
wench.
Wench. Wench. Sorry, my
wench.
Wench. French.
Got it.
I'm sorry. But country maid. And yeah, I'm an innocent girl, just, you know, that innocent fall in love with Don Armado, but as well with Costard, and, you know, with, as well with men's, new men's. And
awesome.
You know.
And Mindy Raskinen, what do you play?
I'm Maria. I'm one of the Princess of France's ladies in waiting. And in this scene, I'm also Don Adriano de Armado.
Oh, muy bien.
Yes.
So we've sort of set up the scene, but let's go ahead and hear the scene. Does it need any further setup?
I'll just say that it starts off with Armado admitting that he's in love with Jaconetta, and we kind of go from there.
Okay, great. Well, this is the cast of Rosedale Shakespeare's production of Love's Labor's Lost.
I've promised to study 3 years with the Duke. I will hereupon confess I am in love! And as it is base for a soldier to love, so am I in love with a base wench. If drawing my sword against the humor of affection would deliver me from the reprobate thought of it, I would take desire prisoner. I think scorn to sigh. Methinks I should outswear Cupid. Comfort me, boy. What great men have been in love?
Hercules, master.
Oh, most sweet Hercules. More authority, dear boy, name more. And sweet, my child, let them be men of good repute and carriage.
Samson, master, he was a man of good carriage, great carriage, for he carried the town gates on his back like a porter, and he was in love.
Oh, well-knit Samson, strong-jointed Samson. I do excel thee in my rapier as much as thou didst me in carrying gates. I am in love, too. Who is Samson's love, my dear Maud?
A woman, master.
Boy, I do love that country girl that I took in that park with the rational hind Costard. She deserves well.
To be whipped, and yet a better love than my master.
Sing, boy! My spirit grows heavy in love.
And that's a great marvel, loving a light wench.
I say sing!
Forbear till this company be passed.
Sir, the Duke's pleasure is that you keep Costard safe, and you must suffer him to take no delight nor no penance, but he must fast 3 days a week for this damsel. I must keep her at the park. She is allowed for the day, woman. Fare you well.
I do betray myself with blushing. Maid!
Men.
I will visit thee in the lodge.
That's hereby.
I know where to situate.
Lord, how wise you are.
I will tell thee wonders.
With that face.
I love thee!
So I heard you say.
So farewell.
Fair weather. After you.
Come, Jaconetta. Away.
Villain! Thou shalt fast for thy offenses ere thou be pardoned.
Well, sir, I hope when I do it, I shall do it on a full stomach.
Thou shalt be heavily punished.
Let me not be pent up, sir. I will fast being loose.
No, sir, that were fast and loose. Thou shalt to prison.
Well, if ever I do see the merry days of desolation that I have seen, some shall see.
What shall some see?
Nay, nothing, Master Moat, but what they look upon. It is not for prisoners to be too silent in their words, and therefore I will say nothing. I think God have as little patience as another man, and therefore I can be quiet.
I do affect the very ground which is base, where her shoe, which is baser, guided by her foot, which is basest, doth tread. I shall be forsworn, which is a great argument of falsehood, if I love. And how can that be true love which is falsely attempted? Love is a familiar. Love is a devil. Cupid's butt shaft is too hard for Hercules' club, and therefore too much odds for a Spaniard's rapier. His disgrace is to be called a boy, but his glory is to subdue men. Adieu, valor. Rust, rapier. Be still, drum, for your manager is in love!
Awesome. So this is one of the more lighthearted and fun Shakespeare plays.
Yes.
But it's not done very often, is it?
It is not. I think it is because the language of the play has a lot of puns and wordplay and goofiness, and so some folks can get a little scared off by it. But our company has always been about, above all, about understanding Shakespeare's language and being true to the text. So we cut it down quite a lot, but when the parts that we keep, we spend a lot of time making sure that we know absolutely what we mean, because one of our core values is that if the actor knows what they're saying with a Shakespeare play, the audience will know too.
This is true. And you're playing at Ramsey Park. Is this outdoors?
It is outdoors indeed, yes.
Okay. And when do you open?
We open tomorrow, October 17th.
Yay, October. Yay. Everybody like it. Did the Rocky thing on top of the stairs. And how long do you play?
We play through November 2nd, Thursday to Saturday at 7:30 p.m.
Rain or shine?
Our philosophy is that if we have 10 people who are willing to sit out there in the field and watch us, we play.
Okay, great. This is a kind of show that people might want to bring a family to?
Oh, yes. It's definitely a Shakespearean comedy that has something for all ages. The character that you just heard, Costard, is kind of a sort of a goofy word-mistaking clown, and he can be a lot of fun. There's also humor on all kinds of levels and lots of goofy running around, being in love and making a fool of oneself. In fact, in the park, we often have children come by and just watch us for a little bit, and we have little buddies. We have little friends who come in and check on us.
Awesome.
So, plus there's costumes and singing and dancing.
Who could go wrong with that?
Exactly.
So folks should know that your curtain is it's not really a curtain. You start at 7:30. So don't be thinking that you're going to get there for an 8 o'clock show. It's 7:30.
Yeah, for reasons of light.
Of course. Yeah. And where can folks go to get more information?
To rosedaleshakespeare.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And since I'm terrible with my handwriting and I'm not going to risk saying your names myself, y'all are going to help me go out and just... by saying your names in order. Ready? I'll point to you. Here we go. That was...
Mindy Rast-Keenan.
Anna Carvalho.
Levi Dore.
Deb Strusand.
Lemons Clemens.
And they're all with Rosedale Shakespeare's production of Love's Labor Lost, playing October 17th through November 2nd at Ramsey Park. Curtain is at 7:30. For more information, rosedaleshakespeare.com. And this is a song from Love's Labor's Lost.
It's not a good idea to think it's real. The words they use to describe the way they think they feel. They're just in love with saying they're in love. It's not a good idea.
Okay, thank you so very much. We did another hour of Offstage and On the Air. If you're listening on the terrestrial radio, we're going to Austin Monitor News next. That is with the incomparable Tracy Schultz, who's standing right next to me. Say hello.
Hello.
Anyway, if you're listening, I'm not sure that we're going to have a backstage at Offstage or not. We'll find out. So if you're listening on the podcast, and you should, just stand by to see what happens. We're going to go away with the Elephant Melody from Moulin Rouge. See you guys. We'll see you next week.
What's love got to do with it?
Suppose we never fell in love.
Who needs a heart?
Suppose I kept on singing love songs.
All of this music.
Yes, it breaks my heart. Yes, it breaks my heart.
Well, the curtain has just come down on Indeed, the musical. The story of a group of people trying to find work by going to Indeed. I don't know. We can't all be creative. That was it. Anyway, the show is over, and we've left the backstage. We are outside standing by the dumpsters. It's a nice, crisp day here in Austin, Texas today, which is completely different than what it's been. Right? Right.
Yes.
And joining us back here is Mindy Rast-Keenan.
Hello.
Hi, Mindy. And we have Anna Carvalho.
Hello.
We have Lemons Clemens.
Howdy.
It is. It's like you said your last name is your first name with a C.
That's it.
And, of course, we have Deb Strusand.
Hello.
Well, let's start with the people that haven't been back here before. Lemons, what's your story? How did you find yourself in theater?
I've been doing theater since I was 10, actually.
10. So, what, 5 years ago?
Yeah. I'm not 30 at all. No. I've been doing theater since I was 10, so I did it all through high school. I did tech theater. I did everything.
Where did you go to high school?
Here in Abington, Austin? Pennsylvania, actually.
Abington. Where is that in the realm of Pennsylvania?
West of Philadelphia.
West of Philly. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, is it a suburb of Philly? Is it like near Lansdale?
Absolutely not. It's okay. About half an hour outside.
Oh, okay.
I traveled from Philly to my school.
Oh, okay. So you're from Philly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Philadelphia, where your life is healthier. Just going to say that. I used to go to Philly quite a bit. And what was it that got you started in theater?
It was actually my mom. She really loves making costumes.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew that there were like plays going on at my school. So she wanted me to like start getting involved in it. So she encouraged me to go see a lot of productions. I got really excited. And then she was like, you should audition. And of course, in middle school, they like let you do whatever. So they kind of let anyone into the play. But I had fun and I loved it. So
cool. Do you remember your first play?
My first ever play was Pirates of Penzance.
Oh, wow.
Nice. Yeah.
Gilbert and Sullivan.
Correct.
There's nothing wrong with them. They're not sexist or racist at all.
No.
Nope.
Not by today's standards.
Well, that's awesome. And how did you get from Philadelphia to Austin, Texas?
By way of grad school. I actually came down here to go to UT for a while. And then I started doing theater productions again. And I was like, I finished my degree and I don't want to do that anymore. And I would rather do theater.
So I take it your degree is not in theater.
That is correct.
What's the degree in?
It is a master's of advertising.
Well, of course. Master's of advertising. That's awesome. Well, so
thank you.
You would think they'd call it, well, I guess advertising is a little different than marketing.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, I will allow them to have that degree field. And so how long has it been that you've been? Because we haven't met before, so I'm surprised. I haven't seen you.
I worked sort of at the Vortex with Janenko for mm-hmm. a while, and then I went into retirement.
I have a show going on right this very second.
That is correct.
Yes. Are you involved?
No.
Okay. We're going to get them on the air.
Cool.
Janenko does wonderful work,
mm-hmm.
And we like them a lot. Well, that's great that you've worked with them, and the Vortex, of course, we like a lot. But Shakespeare's a little different from that kind of work.
That is correct. I actually took a break from theater after my last production with Janenko, but I did it so that I could do a lot of dramaturgy with Rosedale Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
And here I am. I'm on the board, and I'm in the show this time. So things are a lot different, but it's been really fun.
Oh, well, that's
cool. We are making maximum use of all of Lemons' talents as far as theater that I know of. I could be wrong. Maybe Lemons has more.
I haven't run a lighting board yet, so we'll get there.
You can come to my theater and do that. So you get this asked all the time, but I just have to. Is Lemons your given name?
That is not my given name, but everyone does call me that, even my parents.
Awesome. No, I was just... I would have applauded your parents if that was your given name.
They're not that kooky, unfortunately. But
so Anna, what about you? Is it Anna or Anna?
Anna.
Anna. Sorry.
That's okay.
I made assumptions.
Yeah,
you know what we do.
I'm Portuguese anyway, mm-hmm. so you can. In Portuguese, we say Anna.
Okay.
So it's, you know.
There whatever. You go.
It's fine. I'm fine with it. And I'm Portuguese, and I start doing professional theater in 96. So, you know, I'm just a vampire.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Lisbon.
In Lisbon.
Yes.
Yeah. I've been there.
You've been there?
I have.
Oh, my God. Do you like our food?
I do.
Yeah, it's
great. Yeah,
no, so much.
I like that. Love that area of the world as well.
Yeah, and the light, everything.
So were you doing theater in Lisbon?
Yes. I start in film, and I always like to say that I start with theater, but no, I start in film, but then, you
it's
know,
okay.
I
we
made
won't,
a lot.
We won't judge you too harshly.
No. But I made a lot of plays there, so and my first one was a play of German Fassbinder. Uh-huh. We're doing monologues, and I was one of the police guys. I was a guy. I made a lot of guys.
And you're playing a guy in Love's Labor's
yes,
Lost as well.
I am,
okay,
I am.
Cool.
I love it. So it's
well,
fun.
Why not?
There's some bias about girls playing guys.
I love it.
You get to take up space. You get to enjoy privilege for a little while. Why not?
I like to say that. Now I think I had, but during my career, I don't think I made a lot of love stories. Not the loves, like old women, pretty women. Like no, I'm never like that kind of characters. So, but I'm fine. I have a lot of fun doing other stuff. So yeah.
Cool. And so, what? How did you get to Austin, Texas?
So arriving in the United States 4 years ago, I was in LA. I got a scholarship to study there, and then
what?
Acting.
Oh, cool!
I was in TVI acting studios, mm-hmm. and I wanted to come here and have the experience. I've been in London, I've been in Germany, I've been in other countries, and I want to come to the United States. You have to come here. I give up of a lot of things, and I made it.
And why Austin? Why here?
Well, Austin was 1 year ago and was for like personal reasons.
Been there.
Boy.
Yeah.
Boy.
Yeah.
Okay. And I decided to give it a try and just start working much better than LA.
And here we are. Well, good. Well, we're happy you're here.
Thank you. I'm so
happy to we don't get a lot of people from Lisbon here in Austin, so that's
there's a few, but not a lot. It's true. Yeah, I found one woman. But.
Yeah, because you say you're Portuguese. I was going to assume that you were Argentinian.
Argentina or Brazil?
Brazil. That's Brazil. What I said Brazil when, yes. I, when I meant that. So,
you have a lot of Brazil, yeah.
Yeah, because you don't see a lot of people from Portugal.
No. In LA, you have a few. In California, you have a few. But in here as well, but it's pretty rare to. I didn't find a lot. But it's fine, you know.
Good. It makes you unique. We like that.
And I start doing theater here, like with, in that time, was Something for Nothing Theater. Mm-hmm. So I start with Deb Lemons as well, was in the other.
And is there a theater that is specifically Portuguese theater that
here?
No, in Portugal.
Oh, in Portugal. Yeah, we have some writers. We mm-hmm. have some people. In fact, Shakespeare, he truly admired one of a big authors, one of the big writers. Mm-hmm. It was Gil Vicente. But Gil Vicente was before Shakespeare, but he knew about him because, like Shakespeare, he write a lot, you know, he was kind of controversial person, but he was more in a political way. And he's so...
Did Shakespeare steal any of his plays?
No.
Shakespeare was very good at that.
Yeah,
oh,
no,
he stole.
No.
Almost stole. It's a little bit different, the style, but they have a lot of similar stuff as well. And he admired him because he didn't care about, like, you know, he used to make fun of Judge and everything. You know, in our days, politicians, mm-hmm. You know, people that just think about money, and you know, so he was really well known because of that. And what we know, because we don't know if it's true, but the story says that he knew about Gil Vicente, and mm-hmm. he truly admired him because he used to go to the court and be with the kings and the queens and make fun of them. So, and that's
I'm sure he knew of him.
Yeah. But it's a hard.
He actually told me that once.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So now, okay.
It's true.
Yeah. What else did he tell you?
Oh, I can't tell you.
Come on.
It's between he and I. Well, so I know that Deb and Mindy have been on the show before, so we know all about your pasts.
Of course.
But let's. So I sort of want to go off into a conversation that we were having before you guys went on the air and something we've been talking about on the show for the past couple of weeks. We're talking about cell phone usage for audience members, as well as the idea of actors breaking the fourth wall and breaking character to yell at people using cell phones. So first of all, I've sort of made a switch in my head, at least a little bit in theory, going, all right, I can see where a new generation might be okay with cell phone usage as an audience member during a show. How do you guys feel about that?
I think it's very context dependent. At our shows, I don't get upset unless I see somebody using a cell phone the whole time. But we're doing shows in the park. We're doing shows where people have picnics, where people bring beverages, people have their kids, people have their dogs. We've had kids and dogs running across the stage at different times and some of my favorite moments. So if somebody is on their cell phone, I mean, they're relaxed. They're having a good time. I'm not too worried about it. But if you're in an indoor theater and you're in the darkness and your cell phone light is showing and you're not paying any attention, you're just tapping away. I think I understand why actors are upset by that. And personally, I'm pretty much always a fan of breaking the fourth wall. I think it's one of the most fun things that we can do in theater. I feel a little sad for the actor who gets so, like, just that, you know, if they're hurt by the cell phone, I feel sad that they would be so hurt that they'd feel you know, like they need to break character. But I also feel like some of the most fun moments that I've ever seen in theater are actors spontaneously breaking character because something happens in the audience. So I think it, like I said at the beginning, I think it's very context dependent.
Okay.
I remember having this conversation because people talking about it when Rihanna did it.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, that's how we talked about that earlier.
Yeah.
About Slave Play.
Yeah. And it's, and like the justification for it was like the writer liked it. And it's like, my mind is going to, when I studied abroad in Stratford, our teacher had had a stroke previously, and so it's like there was something in her brain that made it physically impossible for her to
tune out background noise. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if that teacher had been in that audience, she would have been completely cut off from the play because of this distraction that she physically could not tune out. So it's like, it's so... And I get the context of, if it is a casual performance space, then it's okay for the audience to be a bit casual. Don't go overboard, but okay. But if you're in a professional theater or even a not professional theater, and there's things like, oh, it's elitist to ask people not to. It's like, before every movie, before pretty much every play, they're like, turn off your cell phones. No, it's not elitist. You know the message, and you're deliberately not doing it. And that is so utterly disrespectful. And it takes away from the people sitting near you. While the lights can be blinding, often the actors can see, and we feed energy off of the audience. So if we know there's a block there, we don't get that energy. So the performance isn't going to be as good, even though we want it to be. As for breaking the fourth wall, the funny moments where they break the fourth wall is when they don't quite break the fourth wall. It's like, it still feels as though it is part of the performance and it's still a character decision.
Ooh, yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah, but it's like, I've been in a play where it wasn't the audience, but like one of the lighting boards like screwed up and like put us in blackness, and she literally stopped the show. And I heard about another production where another actor like stopped the show because something went wrong. And it's just like, you've ended the show. It doesn't matter how much you go forward. You have ended the energy. You have ended everything. So, I mean, I get it if you're like a character and you create a funny moment. Yeah, that can be great. But if you're like, hey, get off your phone, you've just stopped it for everyone else. So
yeah, I think that's an important distinction you're making.
I also definitely agree with that. I think the purpose of theater is to entertain. And so if you can find an entertaining way to get somebody off of their cell phone, go for it. I think that's so interesting. As an audience member, as an actor, I think that will continue the energy. It will.
So
encourage.
You'd be okay if Willie Loman told you to get off of your cell phone?
Yeah. If he climbed into my lap and pulled it out of my hand while delivering a monologue, you bet. I'd be okay with that 100%.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if Willie Loman gave a speech about how, like, he can't make sales anymore because everyone's just focused on their cell phone and all that advertising on their cell phone, I mean, yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, but Willie Loman, presuming it's done in the era in which it was written, mm-hmm. there were no cell phones back then.
Well, he could just say telephones.
Yeah, I mean...
get your telephone out of the audience. your princess phone is bothering me.
As far as using cell phones during a production, I think it's a common issue now that we have so much technology everywhere.
Speak of the devil, that's my phone going off.
So it's one of those things that I think you have to kind of be prepared for. So like Deb was saying, for our production, it's more casual. We mm-hmm. expect people to be on their cell phones, be taking pictures, be wandering around, getting up to take phone calls, contacting, whatever. But generally speaking, we try and entertain them to a point where they're like, screw my cell phone. I never want to see it again. I'm having a great time. But yeah. I mean, it's true.
I think my biggest issue is when actors break character and break the fourth wall, mm-hmm, because yes. I believe it takes the audience out of the moment.
For sure.
Yeah. But there was just this recent incident of Joshua Henry, who is, I keep forgetting the name of the musical he was doing. The wrong man, who stayed in character in the middle of the song, and there's video of it, and it's nice. They happened to be shooting B-roll that night, and he walked up to someone and snatched the phone out of their hands and threw it underneath the audience risers without missing a beat. And I am really sort of ambivalent. I don't know how I feel about him doing that, because he didn't break character. Right. He did break the fourth wall, though.
Right. I mean, I think that's different because there are two parts to that. One, he didn't break character, but two, he did throw somebody's cell phone under the risers, and that's kind of a lot.
It wasn't gone forever.
But at the same time, when you go see a show, I think the idea is not using your cell phone, and sometimes at the beginning of the show you say that. So that person was doing something that wasn't supposed to be, you know, was his show as well. And even if you go there to see it, it's kind of respect both sides. So that's one thing. But again, like, he broke the fourth wall, but I think he made it in a more stylistic, beautiful way. Yeah, yeah?
A little bit different.
Yeah, a little
bit. Well, it's an interesting conversation that I think we're going to continue to have, because they're going to get smaller and they're going to get more difficult to turn off.
It also brings up the question of piracy, too, because a lot of times people bring their cell phones to record it. Like, I was at a Cirque du Soleil show and I was distracted because in a couple rows in front of me, there was a person with their cell phone recording an act. And it's just like, I was watching the act through the cell phone for bits. And it was just like, I want to watch the act. I don't want to watch you recording the act.
Yeah. I do think it takes a little bit out of an experience.
Yeah. And then it's illegal to do it. You're giving this thing that's supposed to be paid for and...
And everything is like, there's no light. Everything is dark. And suddenly you have this light popping and you're like, okay, I can see it. And I've seen... On theaters, like people, theater, but was a movie, and I've seen people, it was one of my friends, she was texting, and she had to send a message, she was like working things, and I was like, please don't do it, and I was trying to help her, and the guy just freaked out with her, and I couldn't understand, because I was next to her, and I was like, oh, that light is like, I can't see anything, because he would have the light, so it's all like thinking about the person that is next to us as well.
But absolutely. Well, thank you guys for joining me backstage here.
Thank you.
Such a beautiful day in Austin. I think we've solved this problem.
I think the dumpster has a new coat of paint.
It's a new dumpster.
Oh,
they emptied it too, so it smells much better. Yes. But thanks again, and have a great run of Love's Labor's Lost.
Thank you.
All right, see you guys.
Bye. Thank you.
Yay.